Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I am the very puffy-faced JB, joined with the puffy-eyed Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
Have you recovered after this week's debauchery?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but I've recovered from celebrating our friends, Mike and Emily, get married. Mm-hmm. England rugby win. And England's unbelievable cricket win.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, before we get into that, we'll be joined by the extremely puffy-walleted Tim Cocker. How are you, mates?
Very well. Hey, listen, I do not want anyone to think that I am not in studio with you because I'm taking a holiday or anything. I am in Greece because it is the home of shipping containers.
Exactly.
And I am here to scope out a podcasting shipping container for the forthcoming season.
That's real commitment. By anyone's standards, that's real commitment.
Dedication to the cause. Very good, Tim.
And in terms of the cricket, I am inspired by JB's love of drinking at altitude. I actually spent the entire day on Sunday sat in a rooftop hotel pool bar watching cricket, and that was 6 hours of my life brilliantly invested.
Oh, wasn't it just... I've only ever seen two games of cricket, really. Like, really paid attention to them. One was the World Cup final, and the other one was this Ashes Test.
You have picked two of the best games you possibly could. If you're a neutral, these are two of the best games. But if you are a fan of the England and Welsh cricket team, you have picked two of the best you could ever have picked.
Yeah, it's quite... I like the return on the investment of time. That's how I feel about it. It's like it feels right.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to only be downhill from here.
It can't be. That's all cricket is. Ben Stokes winning things.
Yeah, there's a lot of rugby. You know how you love, JB, a really good scrum or a rolling maul.
Oh yes.
But casual rugby fans will sort of not understand and not enjoy the sheer joy of an incredible driving maul.
No.
It's the same with cricket, because one of my other favourite cricket matches to watch was when it was ended up being a draw in South Africa, and it was Michael Atherton getting like 185 not out, and him and Alan Donald just having England couldn't win the game, and Mike Atherton just batted for about 2 days to save the test.
There is something rather heroic, isn't there, about just staying in,
yeah,
and batting low numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, what Leach... Well, it's
exactly
what
the cricket equivalent
did.
of a rolling maul.
Yeah, Leach, one run.
Yes.
One run. What a run. what an incredible run.
But that was partly because of Ben Stokes' magnificent just control of where he was batting and when.
Oh my word! It
Welcome
was
to the what Egg Chasers doesn't work anymore.
No, I don't know what the
Willow
is.
The Willow Hitters cricket podcast.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, we should talk about some rugby, I guess, because there was some this weekend.
There was some rugby. There's also a bit of news going.
There
on.
There is a bit of news
on and about,
which I we'll get to news later. We had a warm up game of, well, I don't know. Would you call it significant? I don't think it was that significant.
Before the game, I thought it was going to be significant. I would suggest it was reasonably significant for both teams, actually. I certainly think both teams will learn something about themselves from that game.
Oh, my word. You're not wrong. I think Ireland have got a lot of learning to do.
Well, it, it, I mean, it was not a good Ireland performance.
Did you manage to find somewhere in Greece that showed the game, Tim?
Yeah, well, no, actually, I didn't travel till Sunday, so I watched it.
Well, I thought you'd been away all week.
Hello? Oh, no, of course I have. That was last week. I watched the Wales-England game.
Are you
last
okay,
week before
mate?
I travelled. Sorry. I'm a few Cipro's deep this evening. Yes, no, I did find somewhere to watch it.
Are you sure? Why would you lie about this? This is peculiar.
Yeah, it's really, my brain is escaping me. Yes, I did. And I think this is very smart from Ireland, because how many World Cups have Ireland been disappointed to have got knocked out in the quarterfinals? They want to avoid that this time, and they're doing that by going out in the group stages.
Well, I'm...
That's a hell of a look. Hell of a way to avoid the quarterfinal heartbreak.
Yeah, well, I'm going to say this wasn't a good game for England. That would be my initial takeaway.
You did say that after the last Ireland game when England hammered Ireland.
Yeah, and I was right.
You said...
I was absolutely right.
Here's why England need to be worried.
Yes, and nothing really has changed. I mean, Ireland should have been worried. They went to play Wales in Cardiff. And if you look at those teams like for like, talent for talent, Wales versus England, Wales should have lost that. England should have beaten Wales. Now, looking at what Ireland did this weekend, it looks like they haven't learned a single thing from playing England last time. It was like exactly the same game, except England had improved and Ireland sort of buried their head in the sand and thought, oh yeah, that must be some sort of one-off result against England. No, it's not. Ireland, it's bad. It is real bad for Ireland. It's also bad for England, because if they believe that every team they're going to face are going to be as bad as Ireland, they've got another thing coming.
Well, so... There's quite a lot to unpack there. I think one thing, Ireland did change their tactic. So one of the things that Ireland did badly against England last time was they kicked poorly and gave the back three possession.
Well, they certainly kicked poorly again this time round.
They didn't really kick.
They didn't.
Because they didn't get enough possession to kick.
Oh.
So they didn't get the opportunity to kick. So they're kicking. It was discussed in the week about the total lack of box kicking that they played, the tactic they employed against Italy. And they did something similar again. But it was partly a consequence of not having the ball.
Very funny you say that, because I've got on my little notes here, was Ireland's kicking strategy part of the way they wanted to unlock England? Because Byrne made four kicks to nothing. I mean, three in the first half, just dreadful kind of speculative. Like, what... The sort of kick, and this is not a joke either, it's not me trying to be funny or anything like that, it's exactly the sort of kick that you see someone do who has never played rugby before. Like, in your first ever game session of rugby, someone gives you the ball and you just boot it as hard as you can in the air. He did that four times.
He did one as well in the second half.
It was egregious.
Where Conor Murray passed it back into him in the 22, and he just boots it straight out about 10 yards outside the 22.
Yeah.
But... Obviously, he carried it back in, which gave England a line out in his own 22. Which that was a schoolboy mistake.
Yeah, I'm very, very reticent to criticise players this strongly, really, because you never know, you might meet the guy or something, and I'm sure he didn't want to go out and have this performance. That might have been the worst international performance by a 10 who is paid to play the game at tier one I've ever seen. And that's no exaggeration.
I think that is being a bit harsh.
What did he do well?
It was his first start. I thought some of his tackling was good when there were big boys running at him. When Itoje and Tuilagi and Billy, he did miss a couple. He slipped off a couple, but he also put some good ones in.
You would do, wouldn't you? You'd be so frustrated.
But part of it was, so your 10 can only play as well as the ball that the pack give him.
Mm.
And he did not have a good time of it because of the pack. And I'll say this in two main regards. One, the line-out was awful.
Abysmal.
Even when Ireland did win the ball, it was just totally, totally disrupted by Itoje and Chris.
Line-outs aren't that hard. They're not that hard. I know people are going to say, it's a professional level and this, that and the other. It's just not that hard. You just call the right ball, and with the right scheme, you should win a lot of line-out ball. It should not be that hard at international level. Rory Best has got to take some responsibility.
Absolutely, he does.
And again, that's another thing which a lot of Ireland watchers have been noting, is that maybe this guy's just 1 year past it.
He might be. Now,
it shouldn't really affect his throwing, but it is.
It shouldn't. For a long period of time, the line-out has been very good for Ireland. Mm. I know they did not play well. Their set-piece faltered against Wales again in the Six Nations, but it has for a long period of time been good. I would look at this one and say, you're missing James Ryan and Toner yep. from the starting line. You've gone for Hendo and Klein, who are big, solid boys, but they're not renowned for being line-out forwards.
But do you know...
Like, and Itoje and Cruis just seem to read everything brilliantly.
But the thing about line-outs, okay, and I'm sure people will disagree with me on this, but it's more about scheme than it is personnel. Yes, you do get amazing line-out jumpers and Nauses who know everything about line-outs. But ultimately, if you go into a line-out and you've got two second rows that can jump and, say, two back rows that can jump, you should be calling it to the space. It's not about the individuals.
Yeah,
it's about
reading the game and
the combinations and the calls and then just getting your details right. It's not about one superstar guy who can magically unlock line-outs. Now, they do exist. Ritalik against England would be a great example. But generally speaking, it should be a lot easier than what Ireland made it
look.
Yeah,
they really struggled. When the pressure came on, and actually it didn't change at all. If anything, it possibly got worse when Cronin came on.
Yeah.
Cronin, for all his 30-yard, 40-yard, 50-yard tries, he has always struggled a little bit the line-out. So the line-out was one thing that majorly put pressure on Ireland. The other thing that majorly put pressure on Ireland was winning the gain line battle.
Oh my word. When
they were both attacking and defending, England won that gain line battle consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that you've just said. I think we've spoken about the poor performance of Ross Byrne. I think we should throw the spotlight on the England 10 shirt. And George Ford, I mean, a lot of people were suggesting he shouldn't be in the England squad in the first place at the expense of someone like Danny Cipriani,
exactly.
Yourself included, JB. Phil and I have been praising his form for Leicester all season, and in Leicester's worst ever season, he had an incredible year. Top point scorer in the Gallagher Premiership, grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck. He's a man who's been in incredible form in a poor team, and he's transferred that into the international arena. He's transferred that domestic form into the international arena, and I don't think that Eddie Jones was thinking Ford Farrell would be his axis again 10-12, but I think it's George Ford's form that has demanded that is now back on the table. We were talking about it last week, and it looks like that could well be the recipe for the World Cup.
I think you might be right. I think Ford has forced his way back in, particularly over the warm-up games. And I tell you the other guy that makes the biggest difference, and it's not Ford, it's not Farrell, it's Tuilagi. Tuilagi allows him to do these things.
Yeah, you are definitely right about that. Having Tuilagi there is almost as an out for those two. But also having Thokunasinghe as well.
Yeah.
As someone who can, I mean, the strike runners, if you look at the metres made in terms of the back line, those two hardly make any metres at all, but they don't need to.
No.
Because those two are there to create space and give opportunity for the guys outside them, which they did multiple times for each one of the individuals. Because if Tuilagi is taking a hard line, you've got the option of the Tuilagi, or you've got Johnny May or Elliot Daly or Thokunasinghe out the back, which is... It gives them so many options.
Now, I often think the worst part about developing a drug habit is that if drugs are all of a sudden not available or you end up in jail, you're going to have a rather hard time of it. And I think Manu Tuilagi is a very dangerous drug for England fans to go and get high on.
Well, we have seen this particular high and the lows, the crash...
Yes.
Before, haven't we?
I mean, Manu Tuilagi is rugby cocaine.
The beautiful, beautiful highs, but the crash
the crushing
down to
lows.
Which is, I was thinking that, like, what if Tuilagi's out? In England, they've got options.
But no, they don't.
No one's the same. Now, you can play, so Billy Vunipola can start, if you're taking a line out, for example, or just off loose ball, ruck ball, Billy Vunipola can stand in the centres. Thokunasinghe can stand wherever he wants, really. He can come in wherever he wants.
Yep.
they're not as destructive and as quick, I guess. Or like, it's the combination,
it's
isn't
the power. It? He's just got power
that Manu has.
It's like that. It's that whole thing of walking. Was it Roosevelt? Walk gently, but carry a big stick. And there was one England. I forget which one it was. There's one where they went from a scrum. And it looked like, oh no, that was two different points. Actually, I'm making the same point with a different person. Okay. Actually, it was the threat of Billy Vunipola running meant Bundyaki stayed very tight to the scrum, which meant there was loads of space out wide.
And oh, was that the first Coglissinga try?
Had to mark Tuilagi.
Yes, yeah,
but like, so my problem with Ireland, I've got so many problems with Ireland. Let's just have a look first of all at how England attacked. Every time England had their hands on the ball, they looked like they had intent. They looked like someone had got some sort of threat and wanted to break the game line. George Ford was beating men, he was putting men in space. The men he passed to looked like they were, you know, at least threatening the line. Ireland took everything completely and utterly static.
Yeah.
It was dreadful. I mean, there was one, I don't know if you noticed this, but one time Byrne gives the ball in a sort of like, kind of, you know, that typical formation. You've got a lead runner, one out the back, one out the side, so on and so forth. And he gives it to Jordan Lahmer, who is immediately running sideways. There's no go forward whatsoever. Within the first 2 minutes, Stuart Bonds said, well, I don't usually praise going sideways, but that was wonderful by Ireland. I was like, no, it's not. It's utter garbage. But they were 2 minutes in and they weren't to know that all they were going to do is go sideways. Now, as for the defence, two tries from first phase ball is unacceptable. It's just not good enough. And then two of them, the Itoje one, the Ireland defence basically gave up.
Yeah, it was Jack McGrath just totally did not read his line and left Furlong all alone with Itoje.
Yeah, the Underhill try, was it Underhill or Curry?
The Curry where it was Sinclair Curry to Underhill, yeah. Underhill to Sinclair.
Again, that looked like a training drill. They looked like they were running against tackle bags.
Yeah, and that was only a couple of phases. You're right. I think so. If going back to Ireland, I think there's a couple of things they'll take heart on. One I mentioned before, having the not the first choice second rows.
Yep.
They will look at rebuilding that line out, and not having Carberry or Sexton in there is massive. Byrne did not have a great game.
I was going to say, however, what on earth has happened to CJ Stander? What on earth has happened to Conor Murray? There are big players who are shadows of themselves.
Well, I just wonder...
In this game, yeah. Well, they were. Yeah.
I wonder if Ireland is just a little bit too formulaic, because I was watching them set up for their attack, and they looked like they were trying to run a pattern rather than trying to attack England. And I think they might have just got caught up in being almost a bit too robotic.
But it worked for them once. I mean, they scored the first try. They scored a good try. I think it was a scrum or a line-out on the right-hand side. They played one phase, recycled the ball quickly, went wide to Stockers to give him the opportunity to have a one-on-one with Daly, and he chipped over the top and it bounced back to Lahmer. And that they managed to exploit, because England play this kind of... It's an initial push with the first few men, but then a drift out from outside 12.
Yeah.
They're a bit slow and they drift, but that allows you to get someone like Stockers. And he did it a couple of times. He did it three times, actually, where he was given a one-on-one or space that wide. So they managed to get it a handful of times, but no more than that. And I'd attribute that to the misfunction in forward pack and an inexperienced 10 not controlling the game.
Yeah, but I just think they were simply woeful. There's no other. I mean, I can't think of a single good outcome for Ireland from this. I can't think of one place where they even remotely tested England.
Do you know what I've noticed? I've noticed in this whole conversation is JB, you're going massively heavy on Ireland being woeful. Is that just to avoid any compliment England?
So here's the thing on England, right? England, when they meet a matchup that they like, are awesome. I mean, they are genuinely awesome. They can beat anyone who plays like that against them. So what I mean by that is Ireland are quite a physical team. Leinster are quite a physical team. And to think that they came to Twickenham with that game plan, almost the same game plan that they used in Dublin and got spanked there. And they thought that they could do that at Twickenham. It just boggles the mind. England can do this, but you need to be a bit smarter. And if you are smarter, you can beat England, just as Wales showed.
Totally. And Ireland won't play like that in a World Cup. They'll go back to their simple game plan. They'll play how Wales did last week with loads of bombs against teams like England. And I don't understand why they didn't kick very much. Maybe they were just trying other things. But there are still question marks for England, for my money. Scrum half, Ben Youngs is not in great form. That's an issue. Elliot Daly, as we talked about before, irresistible going forward, shaky at the back with Cock and the Singer in the same back three. That's a big question mark for me still. Do we know what's happened to Mako yet?
No, but...
No. Eddie Jones, so I've watched the press conference afterwards, and Eddie Jones says it was just precautionary. How much of that is true and how much he's just covering and how much he actually knew at that stage, we just don't know. But that is worrying. Mm. Yeah, I think your two other points are absolutely spot on. Ben Youngs did not have a good game.
Yeah, and they still battered Ireland.
Yeah, and actually there were times where Ben Youngs' awful passes worked out well, but only because the likes of Jamie George and Sinclair and Marler, who were looking to truck the ball up, were picking balls off their toes, but they're so talented, they can pick a ball off their toes and still get upright and make yards.
Another day, and his performance could have been absolutely lethal to him.
Yeah, yeah. It was an awful performance by Penny. It really, really was.
I tell you, the other guy, I mean, I say he doesn't get any credit. He gets loads of credit. He gets all the credit in the world, and rightly so. So ignore the first part of that sentence. But I thought Maro Itoje was awesome.
He was.
Now, he was awesome.
He was everywhere as well.
So I used to play with this guy at Broughton Park, and I always used to think that I was better than him. In like drills, I was always better than him. I was definitely a stronger carrier, blah, 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 blah.
Faster?
Probably not faster, but you know, this is back in the day when I used to play in the backs. Yeah, I'd watch him in a game, and he'd always be effective. And one day it just dawned on me, what he was doing is he's just so much fitter. He had so many more carries. The volume of carries made up for the fact that he wasn't, you know, Billy Vunipola, or for that matter, me. and I kind of thought about Maro Itoje, which is the volume of carrying. Eventually, something's going to break. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
He starts with like a 2 yard carry, and then it turns into 2.5 yards and 3 yards. And before you know it, he's just having clean line breaks.
And there was one in particular, one offload sequence where I think it was Maro, Sinclair, Billy. And I can't remember which try it led to. It might have led to Thokkonen Singer's first try. But there was just a midfield carry where each one of those was taking two defenders with them and then getting the offload to the guy coming on at exactly the right time.
Yeah.
Take two defenders for 5 yards, then offload at just the right time. And it's just, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
But yeah, the England pack were very, very good.
And on that, can I mention... firstly, it feels like Maro Itoje is trying to aspire to Sonny Bill Williams in terms of shorts.
Yes,
yep.
His shorts are getting smaller.
Shorter, please.
Watch this space. Maro Itoje's shorts are getting smaller. But also, can we just talk about how frightening Sam Underhill, the Wonder Hill, how frightening his shoulders are?
They are.
They
aren't
are
they?
Freakish.
Yeah, I mean. I loved. I was a bit worried about the Underhill Curry back row combination, only from the point of view of line out ball. Because you've got.
Right, I'm glad you mentioned this.
It was talked about as having three not particularly specialist line out jumpers in the back. Certainly, Billy Vunipola is not a specialist jumper, and Underhill and Curry are not specialist jumpers.
They're specialist enough.
England's line out was absolutely fine. Yeah, they were used intelligently.
Exactly.
They were used at the right time, and obviously having Kurius and Itoje there massively.
But, like, Tom Curry is a 6'2" super athlete. You know, he can get off the ground just fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he's jumping, he's probably getting lifted by someone who's 6'5", 6'6", or one of the... It's absolutely fine. Anyone saying, oh, yeah, England are struggling for options, they're really not. You know, you've got three there. And could you lift Underhill? Probably not, actually. Billy? Well, I mean, they probably could, actually.
Underhill is not nowhere near...
With those shoulders, you want Underhill lifting.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I've even seen Billy go up for Saracens.
Yes.
So it's not...
You can get Billy up as long as you manufacture a position where there's no one competing against him.
Yeah.
Because anyone else is going to get up faster than Billy.
But in fairness, who would compete against him?
I mean,
who would be marking up... All right, it's going to go to Billy. Yeah. What about Cruis and Atoji? You're going to mark them?
Exactly. That's what I mean. You can use him. If he was a primary jumper, if, say, Cruis and Atoji go off and you have to bring on, I don't know, Wilson and another prop, Dan Cole or someone like that, so Billy's your go-to
your main guy.
And Billy's getting marked, you've got no chance.
Yeah, that is a little bit different, I guess. And they've got Laws on the bench, haven't they? So when he comes on, all of a sudden they've got three, not just good jumpers, but excellent jumpers. England's line-out is absolutely fine. It baffles me that people who watch as much rugby as they do comment on the line-out as if it's, you know, level 7 rugby in Liverpool somewhere. Like, if just because you're a big lad doesn't mean you can't go up. You can go up.
Anyone can lift them.
Yeah.
They can shoulder press way more than the heaviest person's weight on their own, let alone when there's two of them.
It's fine.
One last thing I wanted to mention, because I think this is a real positive from this game, but I need to see more of it. So England were overall by far the better team in this game.
Yeah.
There were times, because that island pack didn't have a huge game going forward, but there were times where they were stopping England dead defensively. It wasn't for consistent extended periods, but there were times when they were stopping England in their tracks. The positive out of this was then the decision-making and the tactical kicking from both Faz, but more actually George Ford, to find space and find touch. And it was partly poor positioning by the island back three, who I didn't think had a particularly good game, but it was well exploited by England.
Yeah.
And that gave the territory which allowed England to put pressure on Ireland's line-out, and once the pressure was on Ireland's line-out, it became the England show.
Yep, I completely agree with that. I think Ireland's... I'll ask you this. Did Ireland have no plan? Or were they just too woeful to execute it?
So I think Ireland had a plan, and I think
what do you think that might be? Because I couldn't work it out for the life of me.
So I think we saw it on the first try.
Go on, Tim.
No, I was just going to say you seem obsessed with talking about how bad Ireland were.
Oh, do you know? Because I'm actually astonished. I'm actually astonished about how bad they were. This is a historic loss.
It is.
How can you not be astonished?
They won't be that bad again. They didn't kick, and I think that was deliberate, and they will not replicate that again. They didn't do basics well. The whole, get the field position first, earn the right to play, and then do it. All those basics that we'll see in the World Cup from every team.
I will add this.
Didn't do it at all here.
I will add this. I keep saying lack of intent on the ball. They're always going sideways. Every one of their first receivers was standing still. Basic stuff that you teach kids, they weren't doing. That will change when Johnny Sexton gets involved.
Yeah.
Because it has to change. That will change when Carberry gets involved. However, you can't go back to this lad Byrne ever again. I mean, not until they've got like...
This will be a good learning experience for Byrne.
Yes,
this
absolutely.
This will be a hell of a... He is a young man.
Yeah.
You would learn more from days like that than if it had been than if he'd been in George Ford's shoes on the front of a 50-point victory.
All I'm going to say, right, is just hope your two starters don't get into any bother, because you can't call up him. And if you do need to call up someone, yeah, sure, Jack Carty's fine, but swallow your pride. Give Paddy Jackson a call. That's the only way they could have done anything this weekend, because the two tens that they had available to them, I just don't think were good enough.
Or Steno, but anyway,
We've talked loads
about Ireland being poor, and as we've said, as we all acknowledge, they won't be that poor again.
Yes.
So there's an element of it that's kind of immaterial to go into such depth on a really poor Ireland. I think it's incredibly promising what we've seen from England. As you said, the big caveat: can Manu Tuilagi stay fit?
Well, I think the big caveat is, will England's style match up well against who they play against? That's the caveat for me. Now, you saw them hammer France. Talk about a team which won't play that bad again. France. You've seen Argentina, who attack the fringes of teams very, very well. So it's not entirely clear to me that their style will match up. I have a feeling now, after seeing that, they can overpower Argentina quite handily. Not that convinced about France.
Well, speaking of France, did you see the game?
Well, it's interesting. No.
I saw the results, not the game.
So I've seen the extended highlights. France didn't play particularly well.
Did they not?
No.
Coming off of a win where they did play very well.
Very well. But it's so French, isn't it? They're not going to be able to string more than two good performances together in a row, are they?
As long as they just either beat Argentina or England.
I think France will beat Argentina. But I don't think France can beat England. France can beat England 1 in 10 at the moment, at the current rate of performance for both teams.
So if you think about this French team, okay, not this actual French team, but this French team, like this year and the one the year before, there's no two ways about it. They were poor. Is it not Jacques Brunel? Who was the guy before him? Anyway, it doesn't matter. His team.
Oh, Guinovez.
Guinovez's team, right? They were poor. And they, exactly what you were saying, they couldn't string, well, any performances together.
Yeah.
But they did beat England. They did. So, you know, I saw France last week and they looked very, very well coached. So I don't know what's going on. But I wouldn't count my chickens before they hatch in regards to England playing France.
No. France can beat England. Yeah. I just don't think... If England played France 10 times, England would win 8 or 9 of them, I think.
They'd win the 5 at home and they'd lose the 5 away. No. That's how it'd work.
Yeah, this was exactly what Scotland needed, however. Mm. This was a good point. So when, I mean, after a minute and a half, 1 minute 40 seconds, when Peter Horn throws an intercept to Damien Penaud and he gallops in 50 yards under the post, you think, this is going to be a long day for Scotland. But
and then Penaud scored again, did he not?
He did. He scored 2 tries. Scotland did well, apart from those two, to keep him and Raka quiet. The blitz defence from the wings was very, very good at shutting those two down. And they timed it, Maitland and Seymour, timed it right on a number of occasions where, had they been a yard slower, Raka or Penaud would have had enormous space in front of them.
Yeah.
So they did well on that. They did well to read and stop them. The pack performed well as well. And one man that I love, who is so difficult to tackle and to play against, is Hamish Watson.
He's good, isn't
he? He's so much energy, and he's such a low centre of gravity, so difficult to stop. So it was an adequate overall performance and a good result for Scotland in that game.
What do you think of the two teams that have been announced for the World Cup, the two squads?
Well, there's 3 announced this week.
Okay, so we've got Australia.
Australia was announced on about Wednesday.
Yep.
Argentina was, I think, the day before or the day after that. And then South Africa was just today.
Oh, my, right. We'll talk about the other two. Let's talk about South Africa first. And not about the team, because we know that they're an amazing team.
The team is brilliant. The team has got depth in every single position.
But the question is, how would you know the team is brilliant? Because the nonsense that the SRU put out on their press release, not press release, their graphic, is one of the worst things I've ever seen. I thought I saw the worst ever rugby graphic on Friday night with Toulon putting out their team sheet. And it looked like a front row of 5.
I know. I was trying to work out who was playing in that Toulon team. That was a joke.
But no, South Africa saw that. Hold my beer. And here we have it. I mean, I do not understand. So, if you've not seen this, I'm going to just describe it to you. They're very sensibly grouped all of the players into positions. I like that.
That massively helps.
Well done. They have then spelt the names of the players from the top going down. So on the horizontal plane, you have props, and then on a vertical plane, you've got Kitsoff followed by Stephen. It is a nightmare.
It's awful. I thought I was in the Matrix for a second.
The Matrix is a great way to describe what is going on here.
It is an absolute joke.
I actually know why.
Yes, I know why as well. Actually, it's not excusable though.
Tim, why?
It's how it's done in Japan.
Yeah, they write down
format.
Ah.
Having said that, Tim, okay, if the World Cup was to be held in, say, Saudi Arabia, it would be a little bit bizarre if they started
right to left,
back to front.
I mean, don't get me wrong; it is a nod to the culture, but don't bother. We just want to know the team. We know we're going to Japan, and we'll learn all about the culture there. I don't need the South African squad announcement to educate me on Japanese formatted writing.
Well, that was the second egregious thing that the Springboks Twitter handle did today, because the first one
yes.
was announcing 1-31, one tweet at a time.
Maximum engagement, pal.
Your number one Springbok is Siya Kolisi. Your number two Springbok is Andre Pollard.
And you've got to string all the tweets together, the 30-something tweets.
Ugh.
Yeah, Springboks, you need to get... Just because they've got their act together on the rugby pitch, they feel they can be complacent in other areas now. Whereas before, when they were playing terrible rugby, they had to be pretty good at this stuff. Not anymore. Wild, boys.
They can do what they want.
Congratulations. So,
the manner of letting us know about the squad was one thing. That was dreadful. The squad itself, oh my goodness. That looks like a World Cup winning squad.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, yes. Half of me thinks maybe they release it like this. So, you need a group of code breakers to work out who you're gonna play against. It could be a rather nifty little advantage for them. But you're right; it's an amazing squad.
Yeah,
and an amazing story, and for one of the great guys in rugby, at the stage of his career he's at the age he's at, to see Scout Brits.
Yes.
Going to the World Cup.
But how many good stories are there in this team? I mean, Scout Brits is an amazing story. Don't forget Faf de Klerk and Cobus Reinach. They're not in this country because, you know, they thought that they were going to make the Springboks. Like, quite the opposite. And then you got you got the whole background on Siya Kolisi. I mean, this team is about as storied as it gets.
Yeah, and about as talented as it gets.
Oh my.
And about as enormous as it gets.
Yeah. Oh, my word, they are. I mean, we talk about England being physical, right? And they are bloody physical. And Sam Underhill's a wonderful player, and Ben Curry's a wonderful player. But they can match England for locks, and then one of their loose forwards is going to be Peter Steph de Toy, who is enormous.
Yeah, who can also play lock. If three of those four happen to go down.
Siya Kolisi is legitimately their smallest back five player. And I've met him, and he's enormous. You know, Dwayne Vermaelen will probably be eight, and he's enormous.
Hang on, Quagga Smith will be their smallest back row player, surely.
No, not if he doesn't start, because Siya Kolisi will start
No, but in the squad.
Oh, in the squad, yeah,
yeah.
Quagga Smith. But I think they play the same position, don't they? They both play six.
South African six, open side.
Seven. Open side, yeah. Should we? Here's a question for you, based on what you're saying about how giant the South Africans are, and dovetailing with another story from the week. What rugby player would you most like to see get in the octagon, and maybe against James Haskell, who is going to make his debut there in MMA?
Ooh, against. I tell you who would handily dispatch most people. With very little effort, particularly at this kind of thing. It would be ex-Sales Shark. Can anyone guess who I'm about to say?
No. Ex-Sales Shark.
Ex-Sales Shark, no longer there. Tim?
Vadim Kobolash.
Correct.
Oh, yes. Now you're talking.
Now, this man was described as being able to out-wrestle anyone in the squad with a smile on his face. Like, it's not even close. He was also the best at Sales Sharks in the handling drills and at table tennis.
Table tennis, yeah.
Table tennis was his thing. So, Vadim Kobolash, because I just think he would manhandle anyone because he's got a background in wrestling.
Any Georgian out of that squad, even the scrum halves, would ruin most rugby union players in an octagon.
You've got to say, Georgia would be where you'd be looking.
Yeah, or not looking if you're James Haskell.
Yes. Yes, or not looking. In terms of rugby players...
Joe Marler's got a Zangief out of Street Fighter look, so maybe that will translate.
Yeah, although you really want... You want the Iron Mike Tyson lookalike himself, Ellis Genge.
Do you know, there's no one really in English rugby who I think, yeah, that guy, because rugby players are notoriously bad punchers. Like, rugby punching is hysterical for how bad it is. I mean, if they were good at punching each other, they'd all be dead. You know, like, you'd be watching games from 2006 and everyone would have died. So then they're rubbish fighters.
Well, Sonny,
I reckon, Ellis Genge,
even Sonny Bill's a rubbish fighter. He actually watches boxing.
Sonny Bill actually is a rubbish fighter, though. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Ellis Genge. He actually tweeted James Haskell going, "I want in."
Yes.
And you kind of, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming this is going to be a full on, genuine fight where James Haskell will be at risk of getting seriously hurt losing.
Yeah, he's with Bellator. I mean, that's a legitimate thing.
Yeah, I know, but are they going to put him up against someone that they know he can beat?
I've got two minds on this, right? Number one would be, anyone who was trained is going to be quite... If you're good enough to get... You know, if you're good enough to be on the Bellator roster, you're going to be really, really good. You know, you just are. And unless you've ever trained at, like, jiu-jitsu or some such thing, you don't realise even the guy with even moderate training is going to be really, really good. The other train of thought is, James Haskell is a amazing athlete, and he's enormous, and he's determined, and he's skillful, and he's talented, and he's already trained some MMA,
and he's fit as well.
He's
got a good engine.
He's not going to panic. He's not going to be like, you know, some sort of CM Punk character. I think he's going to be really good.
I think it's an interesting one. I can't imagine being a striker for lots of reasons, including the reason you just said about how terrible rugby players are.
Yeah.
But if he can take it down to ground, he'll be a great grappler.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, with a lot of weight behind him as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want James Haskell on top of you. Well, not everyone.
Chloe doesn't.
Now, Tim, why do you have to lower the tone? Just leave that one there. Leave that one to hang.
But genuinely, I reckon Ellis Genge is a guy that, yeah, I reckon he would have that mentality. He could switch it on.
Yes.
I'd love to see that.
And I think he might be a pretty handy striker as well.
Yeah, probably. Well, let's make it happen. Ellis Genge versus James Haskell.
Two other squads announced this week. We mentioned them before. The Wallaby squad. Any big takeaways from you guys on this?
Not really. A load of generic backs and a couple of wingers.
There's a few interesting things. So obviously, James O'Connor is an interesting addition.
He's in.
He is in.
Thanking higher powers and almighty forces and whatever else he puts it down to.
I did notice that.
The breathing.
Who do you think? Who did he thank?
He thanked a higher power or something like that, yeah. And that at Save Your World, the guy that's got him doing the funky breathing.
Yeah. So much to say about this.
James O'Connor is in.
Good for him. Well done. That's amazing.
AAC is in. Adam Ashley Cooper at 35.
That's also amazing in a very different way.
It is, which means because Jordan Pettier is in, who's 18 years old. You've got one winger who's 35 and one winger who's 18. Although both are probably going to be considered more as outside centres. But
yes.
Outside backs.
Well, you've only got one wing available, haven't you? Because Cora Betty's playing every second that they can get him on the field.
Yes.
So who's the other? And Howlett Petty will probably be the other guy.
No, Reese Hodge. Reese Hodge will probably be the other guy based on performances. So
it probably would be Howlett Petty if they had the world's best fullback in their squad.
Yes.
But they don't.
Mm. Well, just back to Reese Hodge. I got the two confused a second ago. Does he look like a world class winger to you? He doesn't look like one to me.
I think he's a good player.
I think he's a good player. I think Cora Betty looks like a world class winger. I think Anthony Watson and Johnny May look like world class wingers. I think on his day, George North can still. I don't think Reese Hodges.
It's an interesting one. He's just a good all round rugby brain. Mm. I bet if you asked him his preferred position, he'd probably say 13.
Yeah.
Maybe even 12. But with, now JOC, but Kurindrani and Karevi, you're struggling for...
And also, James O'Connor can play on the wing. He's a back three player. And actually, he's mostly a wing. When he first
not at his size. I know he's lost weight, but still not at his size.
Who? O'Connor?
O'Connor. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was very small, and then he did, I don't know, some breathing, and then got a lot bigger. And now he's slimmed down again. But like when I interviewed,
I've been doing it all wrong. I've been trying to shift in the gym. Breathe.
Well, when I interviewed him when he first showed up at Sale, he was an out and out winger, and the reason he came to Sale is because he was promised to play fly half. Which, you know, he's never really fit enough to get on the field, and because he had the skills to play fly half, but he also has a wing. Obviously, you know, people messed around with him with fullback, and
or,
he's not
or in the centre
or in the centre, but he's either a wing or a fullback primarily. So if Reece Hodge is a very good 13, it might be worth looking at, you know, swapping those two round, or there might be something to do there.
Yeah,
and, well, just like maybe just like just sort out their sort of breathing routines, and then. You can do what you want, flip it around.
Exactly.
It is a nice story, though, and good on him.
And
hey, well, listen, I can't let the podcast go any further without mentioning our live pod.
What? Oh, yes. What live pod?
Come on. How have we not mentioned this already on this podcast? Podcastlive.com. Time is running out for you to join us on September the 7th at Twickenham, at HQ, to come and see our podcast live in the newly renovated East Stand. Come and gear up for the World Cup. Come and preview the greatest rugby show on earth on the day that England fly out to Japan, the day after they'd just played their final warm-up game against Italy at Twickenham, with a load of other podcasts happening all on the same day. A big rugby festival. We want you to come and join us. Podcastlive.com. Time is running out. Get your ticket. Come out. We'll be then having some Negronis in Richmond or Twickenham on the river afterwards. We would love to see you there. Podcastlive.com. Get involved.
Yeah, and I want to meet, there's someone I really want to meet in the podcast festival. I'm really looking forward to it. Presumably, the two fans, and I do mean two fans, the only two fans that bought tickets for Stephen Jones's show will still be there. So if you're around, I know it's embarrassing, but say hello, put your hand up, and I will personally buy you a Negroni for being so brave and admitting it. So yeah, look forward to meeting those individuals. And hopefully they'll be wearing one of our Akuma rugby tops.
Absolutely. Go to akumashops.com/eggchasers to get one of those.
Yes, the fabulous merino wool.
Speaking of stash, did you just see George's kit for the World Cup?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, the maroon and the white.
Yeah, like plum-coloured jersey.
Yes. Yeah. Fairly standard.
That's good.
It looks a little bit closer to what an England change kit could look like, but that's because it's a Canterbury kit, but it's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's fine. There you go. It's nice.
Did you see the Worcester Warriors kits?
No.
So
maybe.
I've not seen these.
Worcester Warriors did a kit launch. I'll see if I can get them up now.
Please tell me it was as good as Scarlet's.
It was not as remarkable as Scarlet's, I'm afraid.
I wonder how long we're going to have to live to see another kit launch like the Scarlet's.
There we go. There's a little one. Three kits. Home away, a European.
Oh, I like the middle one. Middle one's nice.
I think they're very nice. So these are VX3. So an unusual
size.
Or different brand.
We shouldn't have kit manufacturers that sound like they could be planes.
Or, well, motorbikes.
I kind of think you're on something here, Tim. And that's, well, the way I think about watching rugby is I'm sort of torn. People say the Six Nations is a great way for people to get into the game. So you go to, like, the Six Nations and you love it, or you watch Six Nations, and after Six Nations, you think, oh, I wonder what Owen Farrell does in his spare time. So then you go and watch Saracens, and then you Saracens think, oh, what am I going to do next? Oh, I'm going to go to Old Albanians and watch them. And, you know, that's how you get into the game as such. But I think it should be the other way, which is you go to Old Albanians first, and then once you've, you know, had a few games watching them, then you're allowed to go to Saracens, and once you've got enough stubs of Saracens, then we will let you into England. You know, that's how it should be.
So you want, like, a reward scheme?
Yeah.
Like at Nando's or Cafe Nero, where you get your card stamped for...
Exactly right. So you'd start, you know, at Old Albanians Rugby Club, eventually go to Sedgley Park, and then you're allowed into Sale Sharks, and then you've got enough credit to go and watch an England game. That's how I'd like it to work.
And if you could get an extra stamp in your loyalty loyalty book, if you bring along someone to watch a game, you get a stamp for them as well.
You can almost go up a level.
Yeah.
You
know,
you're almost,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really good idea, that, Tim. So anyway, I think it should be the same with the kit manufacturers, which is okay. You want to make Worcester's kit? Well, that's cool. Have you got anything from the lower leagues that they can show us if you've got any sort of track record. You shouldn't just be allowed to steam into Worcester and make their kit. In the same way, you shouldn't be, like, Macron should have had a strong track record making local kits before they took on the Scotland job and indeed the Ireland job.
Speaking of kits, actually, I don't think either of you will have seen it properly, but France didn't play particularly well. They were in their change kit, their white.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Le Coq Sportif kit. It is beautiful.
Of course it is.
It is.
Just delicious.
Absolutely lovely.
Do you know what used to be nice? And this is kind of going against what I just said. Is the Kappa kits for Italy?
Italy, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
What did Kappa make originally? Was it tennis equipment?
Don't know. Then I remember being about 9 or 10 years old and having some Kappa poppers.
And they were really cool, weren't they, back in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
I also remember them being...
it was like Scally tracksuits, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're 9 or 10 years old, that's what you want.
Yeah. I remember them being the go-to outfit in the film, the Danny Dyer film, The Business. He used to wear Kappa.
And Fila. Very short Fila shorts.
Did Fila ever make any kits?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Not rugby, as far as I'm aware.
They never had a football.
Kappa did the Scally tracksuits. Then they did the Italy football kit.
Yeah,
Kappa. I've actually got a Kappa kit in the dungeon. I mean, Phil's just pointed it out.
Treviso. Benetton.
My beloved Treviso. Benetton Treviso.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Kappa, that Italian football kit, the skin tight one.
Yeah. I'll tell you the best one. They did, I'm sure they did Tottenham.
Yeah. Yeah.
The funniest was the skin tight kit, which was loose around Jermaine Jenas's arms. So he had to have electrical tape around his arm. So pathetic.
Yeah, it's tight between what's that. That's actually funnier than watching middle-aged men wearing that Tottenham football kit.
Oh my God! Yes, yes. I feel we've missed a squad. We have Argentina.
Argentina. A couple of surprises in Argentina. Three surprises, or two big surprises, really.
Cordero?
There's three European players who did not make the squad. Cordero?
Issa,
the number 8 Issa, did not make the squad.
That's a surprise.
Cordero was shocking. And then Herrera, the tight head prop. Stad tight head prop. So the three of those are very, very handy players. So
well,
it does feel like a bit of a gamble from Ledesma to not take those, although it is showing faith in the guys he has more access to more of the time.
Well, will we have the rest of the squads by the end of the week?
Probably not this week. I think some are only announcing like the first week in September, which is the last of the World Cup games.
When does Scotland announce theirs?
Probably next. It's in the next 2 weeks. It's got to be,
because we need to build our Barbarians team, our hypothetical Barbarians team.
Yes,
with the remaining off casts.
Well, maybe that could be something that we do, either at the live show or just after the week after.
Excellent idea.
Argentina. A couple of shocks in that. One thing that Tim, we've not mentioned this to you. Jay and I were talking off air about one of the things that we might be doing for the live show, and we might be looking at solving or answering a couple of kind of existential rugby questions as part of the live show. But the plan would be to put out those questions on next week's pod. So we'll have a think, and if you have a think at home, get in touch with us at Rugby Podcast if you think you've got an existential rugby question that we might be able to answer on that live pod.
Excellent. Any other news?
I'm thinking like, can you give me an example?
Like, which level 8 team would Owen Farrell work with best?
not exactly what I was thinking. But like, let's say...
who's got a cooler dad, George Ford or Owen Farrell?
Go on, Phil, you were about to say one.
Go on.
Well, I was just thinking in the build-up to the World Cup, who's done it right and who's done it wrong? So at that stage, we'll have seen pretty much all the warm-up games. We'll know, certainly England's four results, we'll know Ireland, or three of Ireland's four results. We'll know what South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, what they've all done. Have any of them made any fundamental mistakes, or can we learn from them for the future? Hmm. Maybe that kind of question. Or maybe
I've got one as well. I've got a suggestion, which is if a rugby player's wife or girlfriend, if their wag falls in a forest but doesn't take an Instagram post of it, did it really happen?
That's a great question. That is a great question.
That is probably more existential than mine.
And it's pressing too.
I mean, it links to something I noticed this weekend. When I was watching the cricket at that poolside rooftop hotel bar at altitude, there was loads and loads of Greek Gen X, I think they call them now. The Gen ones X. That are a bit younger than millennials. Gen X?
I've got no idea. It sounds like a games console to me.
Yeah, well... There were these Gen X, and it's bizarre. And I appreciate this sounds like it's a very middle class, very middle aged thing to say, but I could not fathom what they were playing at. It seemed like in this little group of three that I was watching at one point, it seemed like only two of them at any one time were allowed to do anything. The third person, which rotated, had to be documenting what they were doing by taking photographs of.
Gym culture nowadays. It's bizarre. I've been going to the Virgin Active in Salford Keys, right? And
it's good, Jay, because there's some people that might want some inspiration and might want to come and see great lifting technique. Now know where to find you.
Me lift, yeah, exactly. anyway, I have seen people in there who are not in particularly good shape at all. I mean, the opposite to that, you might say.
Yeah.
On the curl, the little preacher curl thing, and they take pictures of themselves and they angle their phone at, say, like 45 degree. And I'm wondering, why would they do it? But they are. They're doing these Instagram-y posts. They are not the sort of person you'd expect to be doing in Instagram posts. Far from it.
You know why they're on the curl?
No.
The best lighting. That spotlight directly above you. You've got the best downlighter, so you can find the perfect angle right behind the mirror.
Of course. But yeah, it's absolutely bizarre.
It should be a place of work.
It should. I never take my phone into the gym.
I only take my phone in into the gym. I can't. If I don't have a podcast in, I panic. I don't like it.
I'm all right with having it functionally to listen to something, but there's nothing worse than someone who takes about 10 minutes between sets and just sits there scrolling on their phone.
Yeah.
That is me. That is 100% me.
I can't do it.
What a scumbag. What a scumbag. I've got an existential question for you. If the title of a World Cup is gender neutral, does it matter?
It's a very pertinent question given the news that was breaking this week from
What news is this?
So World Rugby announced, I think it was on Thursday, that... they are no longer going to call the Women's World Cup the Women's World Cup. It's just going to be called the Rugby World Cup.
Okay.
So you're going to have the Rugby World Cup 2019, which you will know is the Men's World Cup, and then the Rugby World Cup 2021, which you will know is the Women's World Cup.
Right, okay.
So honourable.
It's just... it's annoying the fact they felt they needed... I'm not annoyed by the action of it. I'm annoyed by the fact they felt there was some inherent good in doing it. When actually the more sensible thing would be to change the World Cup to the Men's World Cup.
Or...
Like Saracens did with their team...
Saracens
team
Men's!
...every week.
Yeah. Saracens ladies, Saracens men's, or Saracens women's, whichever women. One upsets women. You least. I don't care. I don't care. I genuinely don't care. But of all the things World Rugby need to get their head around, a gender-neutral name is not one of them. It's pathetic.
Yeah, it does feel like it didn't need to be done.
Who did they think was going to stand up and applaud this? Like, oh, well done, progress. Nobody thinks like that. Nobody thinks in that way whatsoever. I'd much prefer, the BBC do this, and you will not be surprised to hear it. You'll be listening to Five Live, and all of a sudden they'll go, and AC Milan beat Liverpool 6-0. What, tonight? And then you look into it, it's like women's football. But they don't tell you it's women's football when they're actually doing the scores. I don't see the point in making it gender neutral. I don't see the point in making a big song and dance about it. I don't see who it benefits. I don't see any of these things. It's an absolute nonsense. Change it to men's and then keep women's.
I can understand
go on, Phil.
No, you go, mate.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I think acknowledging that both male and female competitions are happening and giving them equal footing is the right thing to do. There's certain things that I would Wimbledon, for example, I find it patronising as hell when they say advantage Miss Williams.
I love it.
For example,
well, why? It's just what they say. It's like if it's Master Federer, I would have no problem with that either. Or Mr. Federer.
But it's not. So I would get rid of the Miss Williams. I think it's a patronising thing to do. So I'm kind of on board with the point. I just think it's really badly executed. Saracens have done it really well. They do their team announcements and say the Saracens men's team for this Saturday is, the Saracens women's team for this Friday night is. And that makes total sense. Then you know where you are and you know what you're doing. The problem with World Rugby is that they've tackled the same issue in a different way and just made everyone's life harder.
I wonder if this is a better idea. I just thought of it off the spur of the moment then, and now I'm regretting it. But what if they ran the Women's World Cup in exactly the same location, same country, and same time as the Men's World Cup? Effectively, a festival of rugby. So if they were playing in Japan now, or in a few weeks' time, and I happen to be in Japan, which I am, and they were the opening games, I would happily watch them. Whereas don't think I'm going to go to San Francisco or wherever they're going to hold it to watch that. And I wonder if that might be a better way to not only give them equal footing, but also give them an equal share, or not an equal share, but a share of the massive pie, which is the World Cup, and expand all audiences and coverage all in one go.
The problem with that is you're then competing for viewers' eyeballs in a six-week period. So most people can only watch one game per day or three games per week.
Who are those people?
Not podcasters.
Yeah.
Thankfully. But you're competing with eyeballs against the men, and that's not a competition that you want to necessarily put out there.
I don't know. I'm so wrapped up in it that I don't actually know what normal people think anymore. But I remember the last Women's World Cup. It was bloody brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wonder,
But would you have been watching that if the 7 p.m. kickoff was competing for you watching USA versus Tonga, for example?
I feel that I would, because I feel the way it would work is almost like the Olympics, do when they have the daily roundup. So I tune in to watch the 100 meters, and then I watch the weightlifting because it happens to be on the roundup show afterwards.
Mm.
And also, if women's rugby is on TV, you need to really like women's rugby to find it. Okay, that's basically
generally.
Okay.
Call it women's rugby now; it's just rugby.
Oh, sorry. If the rugby, So if the rugby is on, then you're watching the rugby. But if the rugby was played at the same time as the other rugby, it'd be great. This is the problem, right? The wording doesn't make any sense.
Well,
if the men's World Cup, without a doubt, will bring in more eyeballs of people who don't usually watch it, and then they'd be exposed to the women's game. And I'm pretty sure in the later stages they would get more. They would get more viewers.
Definitely in the later stages, I think they would. You're right.
So there you go. I've solved it for you. And no need. Well,
there's one other thorny issue which we don't necessarily want to get too deep into, because I think this is going to be one that's going to get mentioned a lot. But it links quite closely to this, because clearly World Rugby are going down the route of not acknowledging sexual identity.
I wonder where this could go.
In their language.
Yeah, in the language. Yes, good. I was gonna say,
in their language.
In the language, yeah.
We've seen this in boxing, in MMA, in weightlifting, and now rugby. Gender identity is also becoming a story that is unfolding.
Okay, I think I know where this is going. So this is the lady who's playing at
Porth Harlequins.
Is it Porth Call Harlequins?
Porth Harlequins in the Rhone, in the Rhondda Valley.
Okay. This is actually
there will be other people in similar situations, transgender athletes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I actually think this is quite a sad story. There is a lot of blame to go around here, and I think maybe the only person who's exonerated from any blame is the individual that just wants to play rugby.
Yeah, Kelly just wants to play rugby.
Yeah, I mean, that's fundamentally... It's a story about an individual that wants to play rugby, and that's really the shame of it. Now, the people have got stuff to answer for. First of all, the BBC. They really need to answer for something, because it's not good enough. They just write this feel-good story without any kind of reporting, any criticism, nothing really. They just went along and wrote it. I thought they were journalists, but somehow they managed to miss out the bit where Kelly broke someone's ankle, which is bizarre. They then quoted the coach saying, you know, there are some issues, size-wise, of course, and she folded one girl up like a deck chair. These aren't particularly funny things, and these aren't particularly constructive things. So the BBC to write, I mean, it just shows what idiocy must go on there to write that story in the tone in which they did. The second thing I would say is maybe this shouldn't have been allowed to happen in the first place, her playing, for some fairly obvious biological reasons. I just think it's put everyone in a terrible position now, because if you are, for whatever reason, in that situation where you are a transgendered athlete, do you really need, and they're only playing low-level rugby, do you need the exposure and the scrutiny of basically the whole sporting world now as you try and work out what you are, who you are, this, that and the other? I think this should have been stopped before it even happened, because the outcome is going to be, well, I don't really care. I don't play women's rugby. It doesn't affect me. But it will affect the women that play the game, and it will affect this individual. I think the whole thing has been handled absolutely dreadfully. Although there was some speculation that it came out on the BBC to get ahead of the story.
That was the other thing.
But yeah, I think that it's awful journalism.
Yeah, I don't like the way it's reported, only the positive sides.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, you've mentioned a couple of...
Where was the ankle break?
Yeah, and the coach joking that she's going to be a good player as long as she doesn't injure too many of our players in training.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a joke.
That's quite serious.
That is a serious issue. So, I don't like that. I will say, from what I read and what I saw, they have followed the current protocols for reduced testosterone for an extended period of time. There are, not just in rugby, across a whole range of sports, there are questions over the current science, the data of those.
Protocols.
You know, so they've not done anything wrong in terms with the rules.
But this is a case, isn't it, where you don't really need to be a scientist. You know, anyone that comes up to me and says, "Oh, what about the science?" You know, no. If you believe that the difference between yourself and your wife is your testosterone levels, you're insane. You're frankly insane. So let's not pretend.
Well, reducing the testosterone on short term will eliminate all of the long term benefits. That's the key thing.
Mm.
Because you can reduce testosterone for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. That it has had a 30-year impact on or 20-year impact on this individual.
But it just doesn't.
Can't be totally.
It just
eliminated.
Doesn't matter. These things just don't matter. And yeah, like I say, it doesn't. It doesn't bother me because I don't play women's rugby. And any transgender person is more than welcome to come and play men's rugby because the sexes are different.
There's no advantage.
It is different.
There's no biological advantage
yeah.
for that.
Yeah. It does feel like the best thing for everyone, including Kelly in this situation, which she does. She wants the competition. She wants to enjoy the sport that she loves. it might have been better to play touch rather than...
Mixed touch, finally we found a use for touch rugby. You know, if there's one silver lining here, it would be that. But yeah, I just think the BBC's coverage of it was garbage. There's no other way to put it. Garbage.
It's a story to watch because, as Phil mentioned, the protocols have been followed, and currently World Rugby's guidelines are for reduced testosterone for, I think, a 12-month period has to be proven before you can take part in competition. And this is happening across many different sports, and it's a really difficult and sensitive topic for the people involved. But basically, is that testosterone actually mitigating the biological advantage you get from having gone through puberty as a male with added increased muscle mass, bone density, the levers, the physiological shape of your body, which allows a much greater amount of power, strength, and all the rest of it?
Gee, let me think.
And it appears like the data is saying that it doesn't mitigate it, and you're seeing
people. Why do we even need to talk in terms of data? We know for a fact it's not going to. You don't need to talk in terms of data. You don't even need to dress up as scientific.
No.
Anyone dressing up as scientific argument is being completely disingenuous. There is no scientific argument against this. It is obvious.
You can find
some people are suggesting there is because that's the basis upon which World Rugby made their protocol. But I think it's
nonsense.
A very politically correct argument that's being made, and it's not real. It's not truthful. But I would prefer for facts to back that up than put an opinion out there.
How many more facts
can
do we
say,
need?
Well, that's an opinion.
You know, this isn't an opinion-based thing. If you get any science to the contrary of what we know to be true, we know that science has been duped, or we know it's been manipulated. It's ridiculous to the extreme. And the sad thing is, there's someone out there who just wants to be recognised for who they think that they are, and socially, absolutely. But you can't deny the facts are the facts, and
If you're putting people in danger,
the physicality is the physicality.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just the end of it.
And it does seem strange at a time when, player welfare, quote unquote, is this hot button issue. That's why this is going to become a very difficult topic, but a necessary topic to cover, because rugby is one of those sports where it can have a huge impact.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's difficult for the individual involved. It's not a difficult decision for me, though. I mean, not even slightly.
Well, we'll watch this space. Just on the player welfare thing, I do just want to mention, you know how that, I can't remember the guy's first name, but Gabrielag, the French guy, getting cited, 6-week ban. I haven't seen the French squad. It hasn't been announced yet, has it? But
no,
if he misses out, that'll be dreadful when you consider Dan Bigger, not a sausage.
Hang on, mate.
The citing
Hang
commission.
On. Dan Bigger's a hero to the working man of Port Talbot and the rest of Wales. Don't you paint those two instances as the same thing. They're very different. Very different.
They were equally dangerous. I don't want Gabrielag to have been cited. I'm quite happy that Dan Bigger hasn't been cited. And I'm quite happy that Rob Kearney hasn't been cited. But look at Rob Kearney's tackle on Tom Curry. You look at Dan Bigger's tackle on Maro Itoje. And then you look at, or Billy, I can't remember, was it Maro Itoje last week? Yeah. And you look at Remy Gabrielag's tackle. And you tell me why one of them got a retrospective red card and 6-week ban, risking a guy missing a World Cup, and the other two didn't get anything. I just do not get it. It's really hacking me off.
Mm. I can see why the inconsistency isn't great. I have one for you. What did everyone think of Manu Tuilagi's tackle?
Great tackle.
Amazing tackle.
Yeah.
So one
brutal and beautiful.
One particular rugby journalist has suggested it's not a tackle, and furthermore, expect to see more of this. I don't understand what the argument could possibly be. Can you?
Well, he did a very long tweet today, a structured nested tweet, whatever you call them.
I haven't seen this.
About his position on that tackle, and he still thinks that he's right, but he's done a position basically setting out how he is listening to and how he has heard other arguments on it.
Well, here's the bit which confused me. Expect to see more of it. So expect to see more of it sort of says there it's almost been predicted, or whatever Manu had done could somehow have been forecast in advance, and there's some huge advantage. It's just a tackle.
It was.
I don't know what more of what exactly.
It made. So he was suggesting that Manu's arm was behind his body as he made contact, which I don't think it was. I think Manu was wrapping his arm. But if it was behind his body, then it would fall into the shoulder charge definition under world rugby laws. And he was also suggesting that in line with the laws, you've got to be wrapping your arm, which, again, I believe Manu was.
You have to attempt to wrap your arm.
Yes, well done, Tim.
World Rugby have identified that sometimes the impact of a tackle means that you players bounce off and you're not actually physically able to fully wrap the arm, so you have to attempt to, which Manu did.
That was a clear attempt.
I cannot stand the way that this flowchart gets brought up on bloody Twitter after every bloody game for things that's just rugby. Play bloody rugby, on with it.
Here's a thought for you, okay? The Manu situation is interesting, okay, because if enough people, journalists are the sort of people that all seem to think the same. I've yet to find many that think differently to each other. And I wonder if it's this sort of groupthink which is slowly pushing the game into this area of getting safer and safer and safer. And also the sort of thing which makes World Rugby say, hey, let's make a gender-neutral World Cup because everyone with a blue tick is going to praise us and say this is great progress. And I just want... I think there might be something in that. They're so far removed from the average rugby fan.
Virtue signalling, basically.
Say again?
Virtue signalling. Is that a kind of a shorthand?
Yeah, but more serious than that, because what the lawmakers want and the bodies want is to basically represent the views of the fans. But I guess they think the views of the fans are the same as the views of these writers and journalists, and they're simply not. So when you make a gender-neutral World Cup and everyone says, hey, this is amazing, look at this progress, and everyone with a blue tick goes, this is amazing, what progress we've made, they put a tick in the box, like, job done. And it's same, I think, with this Manu thing, which is, oh, this is an outrage. Now, thankfully, there's not very many people that's tended to take that side.
Yeah.
In fact, hardly any, thank God.
There was only one that I've seen who properly took it. Mm. They did happen to be an Irish journalist. I'd suggest there might be... It is often hard to untangle yourself from the bias of...
I would say in that case he's not biased. I think he's a pretty fair sort of journalist.
Oh, no, I think he's a very...
In that respect, he's
a very fair journalist. I actually think he's a good journalist.
Agreed.
And I'm looking forward to meeting him on a podcast live.
You're not meant to give away his identity.
But I think in this there might be some bias because it was an Ireland player. I think it is just a fuss over nothing. I think it was a legal act. It was a very good tackle. It didn't help visually that Manu's shoulder made contact with the ball, and it was on Jordan Lama, who is about 4 or 5 stone lighter than Manu.
Yes.
So the combination of those things just made it look in slow motion worse than it was. Nothing to see here.
Mm. Well, let's leave it at that. I guess we started with Manu. We'll end with Manu.
One very quick final question. We don't need to go into this, but who is more critical for World Cup success? Dan Biggar for Wales, Manu Tuilagi for England.
I would say Manu Tuilagi, based on the fact that Dan Biggar goes out and just perform. If Wales lost all of their fly halves, okay, like they have in the past, they would find the next Rhys Priestland who would guide them to a World Cup final. It's happened before. The thing which Wales have over everyone else is not great players, although the players are good. It's a great mind. It's a genius. It's a once-in-a-generation coach. It, of course, is Warren Gatland. So Warren Gatland is... Now, if Warren Gatland happened to take an ill-advised fishing trip...
Or he's painting the roof of his house.
God, no. No painting.
And jumps off a ladder.
No painting. If he's trying to fix his toaster with wet hands, he's trying to change a plug, like that relatively famous scene off Neighbours, we've got a problem. Dan Biggar is a big setback, but Warren Gatland's the problem. So for me, it's Manu.
I think while Manu was very, very good in this game, England have got other options. And listening to Eddie both before and after this game, England have got other ways of playing.
No, they don't.
So
Slade's going to be fit. Slade's going to be fit for the Italy game.
Slade can't do what Manu can do.
Jonathan Joseph is going to be fit. So
he can't do what Manu can do. You've got to find the only guy, and this is why I'm so concerned about Manu. The only guy who could really replace him is
Ben Teal,
and he is not available.
No,
and to
available.
Me, that is like, oh my god, this is written in the stars.
No, I'm not worried. If Manu goes down,
I'm still not ruling out because of what you're saying about Manu's fitness. You're quite right to point out, and that there is no like-for-like replacement other than Ben Teo. I'm still not ruling out an increased peak Teo. The horn could get dusted off yet.
Wow.
I think because there are there's the exceptional circumstances clause, isn't there, which England can invoke to select from abroad. Now, is Manu going down, but you've got Henry Slade and Jonathan Joseph fit and raring to go? Is that exceptional circumstances? I don't think it is. If
it wasn't good enough to bring back twice European Player of the Year, Steph Armitage back, I'm not sure it's good enough to bring back Ben Teo. Have I got a sound effect? Yeah. Would Ben Teo, being picked for England despite not being eligible, be bigger than when he got picked for the Lions?
Yes. Yeah, I think it would be, actually. If they parachute him in. I mean, in my head, it can only possibly happen if Tuilagi goes down, Joseph goes down, Slade goes down, Pierce Francis goes down, Joe Marchant goes down.
There's nobody there who does.
Lazowski's nope. On the other side of the. He's trekking to the North Pole.
He's not going
to
do it.
Devoto. Billy 12 Trees.
Billy 12 Trees.
You've got to look at guys that do the same as Manu, which is basically nobody except for nearly Ben Teo. Nearly Ben Teo, right?
And Ollie Lawrence by the time of the next World Cup. Maybe.
Okay, there's Ollie Lawrence.
By the time of the next World Cup.
Okay.
Not yet.
You've got. Here's the very short list of people that can do even remotely Manu-type things.
Yeah.
Mark Jennings?
Are we talking just England players?
Just England players. I'm not even sure Mark Jennings qualifies for England. I think he does.
Yeah, well, I guess he's never played for Namibia.
Yeah, so I think he qualifies.
You probably have to convert Tom Young's back to centre.
Yeah, Tom Young's back in the centre.
No,
Sam Hill.
Hang on a minute. Sam Burgess.
Oh yes, he's eligible.
There we go. Although, we're leaving it on a Sam Burgess note.
He will be closer to Japan than most people in England will be.
All he needs to do is run hard going forward. He can do that.
Yes.
Yes. Let's end it on Sam Burgess. Love it.
Sam Burgess. All right. So find us on Twitter, I guess, at Rugby Podcast. Find us at Twickenham.
With your existential rugby questions.
Yes. Yeah. Existential rugby. Hashtag existential rugby questions, because that's a catchy hashtag.
And easy to spell.
Go and buy a rugby top. Go and do that. Go to Akuma Shops. /eggchasers or whatever we are. You'll find it on Google. Follow Tim at Cocker, follow me at Jay Beardmore, and I think that's pretty much about everything. So we'll see you next week, and for those lucky enough, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time at Twickenham. From me, Phil, and Timothy, goodbye.
Bye.
Cali Nectar.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.